RTVE Audio. Descarga la nueva app y disfruta de los programas de RNE y nuestros podcasts originales.
Radio Exterior de España.
English Language Service.
Greetings from Madrid and welcome to the English language broadcast of Spanish National Radio. Here we bring Spain to you through our shortwave broadcasts. Amy Egan speaking, alongside my colleague Marilyn Quintana. What are we doing today, Marilyn?
Today's broadcast coincides with World Book Day, which is also the anniversary of Miguel de Cervantes' death. So today we have a literary broadcast set on the streets Miguel de Cervantes once lived in.
That's right. El Barrio de las Letras is Madrid's literary district full of history and paved with words of great Spanish authors, literally. Felicity Hughes, writer for the new Lonely Planet Madrid tour guides, has just written a book all about the neighbourhood, explaining its history and its authors. She'll be joining us along with David Price, English bookshop owner in the barrio.
For today's broadcast, we have help from sound technician Javier López and production help from Cristina Dorado.
Before we get into the rest of the broadcast, the news from Spain. On Sunday, regional elections in the Basque country finished with a tie between separatist parties EH Bildu and the Basque Nationalist Party. The distance between the two is only of 28,000 votes, with the Basque Nationalist Party taking the lead, but both parties tied with 27 seats.
The Basque Nationalist Party currently governs the region in coalition with the Basque Socialist, and after the results of these elections, the coalition is expected to continue for the next 4 years. Imanol Pradales, leader of the Basque Nationalist Party, celebrated the results.
Han confiado de manera mayoritaria en nuestro proyecto. Con humildad, con trabajo, daré todo por Euskadi.
The majority trusted in our project. With humility, with work, I'll give everything for the Basque country, he said.
The Basque Nationalist Party lost 4 seats compared to the previous elections, but they will be able to reach a majority in coalition with the Socialists, with 12 seats. EH Bildu got 6 more seats than the last elections, a historic result for the leftist separatist party. Pello Ochadiano, EH Bildu's candidate.
Ya estamos en una realidad política nueva. Hoy no hay una fuerza política que vertebra institucionalmente los 3 territorios. Hoy hay 2.
We are already in a new political reality. Today there is not one political force that institutionally supports all territories. Today there are 2.
Also this weekend in the Canary Islands... The Canary Islands are not for sale. Canarian locals protested against the mass tourism model in the islands.
Around 100,000 islanders took to the streets to advocate for a sustainable and respectful tourism model. In 2023, almost 14 million tourists visited the islands, which have a population of around 2 million people. In the last 10 years, 500 hotels have been built in the islands, and the lack of control of tourist homes has a direct impact in the cost of living.
Demonstrations were also called in other parts of the country, like Madrid and Barcelona, and internationally in Berlin, London and Amsterdam. After the protest, Regional Minister of the Canary Islands, Fernando Clavijo, said he is open to rethinking the tourism model.
Creo además que el mensaje no solo lo compartían quienes salieron en la manifestación, sino también mucha gente que no salió y que se quedó en casa, pero que entiende
que las cosas tienen que cambiar. I think the message was not shared only by the people who participated in the demonstrations, but also by people who stayed at home, but who understand that things have to change. We can't continue like this. It's important to rethink and reset.
More protests took place over the weekend in the whole country.
Por la masacre que está viendo en Palestina, es algo terrible.
Because of the massacre taking place in Palestine. With time, we will realize what it is and what it will be, because it's not over yet. Protests in support of Palestine took place in Madrid, Barcelona, Murcia and Seville. Protests denounced the genocide in Palestine and called for the ends of arms trades between Spain and Israel.
They also remembered the 34,000 Palestinians killed by Israel since the 7th of October and the Palestinian prisoners kept in Israeli prisons.
Se olvida la situación de 9 a 11,000 prisioneros palestinos que además...
We don't forget the situation of 9 to 11,000 Palestinian prisoners that face all types of torture and negligence because many died in prison.
Meanwhile, in the Middle East, Israel continues the offensive in Gaza. Palestinian authorities discovered a mass grave in the Jan Yunus Hospital. The NGO Save the Children warned about the consequences of the war, and they assure children are psychologically destroyed. And in the West Bank, Israel devastated the refugee camp in Nur Shams, occupied territory.
Foreign affairs ministers of the European Union met today to discuss new sanctions to Iran after their attack on Israel. Spain and Ireland insisted on the need to recognize Palestine as a state and urge Israel to respond before the European Commission for the unacceptable situation in Gaza.
In Mallorca, Spanish King Felipe VI inaugurated the annual conference of speakers of European Union parliaments. In the opening speech, he highlighted the roles of the European Union in the face of growing polarization.
La unión de todos los pueblos europeos en torno a unos valores compartidos.
The union of all European countries around shared values is the clear identity sign of Europe that, despite all the difficulties and the frustrations, shows its strength precisely when it faces adversities, he said.
Speakers will discuss current challenges for democracies like the wars in Ukraine and the Middle East. The conference will continue until the 23rd of April.
You're listening to the English Language Service of Spanish National Radio.
Of April is the date of today's broadcast, and it's also Book Day, the anniversary of when William Shakespeare and Miguel de Cervantes both died on the same day in 1616. Apparently, there's some discussion about that. Now, Miguel de Cervantes was the author of El Quijote, and his bones are actually here in Madrid in the Barrio de las Letras, the literary district in the heart of the city. Barrio de las Letras, the neighborhood of letters. The streets of this neighborhood hold centuries of history, and today we have with us in the studio tour guide and writer Felicity Hughes, who just published a guide to Madrid's literary district. Welcome, Felicity.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And we also have David Price, owner of the Secret Kingdoms bookshop, an English language bookshop in the Barrio de las Letras. Welcome, David.
Thank you, it's great to be here.
Now, as I just mentioned, it's Book Day, and what better way to celebrate than walking streets made of words, once walked by Quixote, by the author of Quixote himself. Now, this neighborhood is in Madrid's center, sandwiched between Sol and the Paseo del Prado. But Felicity, when exactly did it become known as the Barrio de las Letras?
It began to get this literary reputation in the late 16th century when the Corrala was set up as Madrid's first theatre.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then it's slightly outside the city walls at that point, but very soon within the city, and it attracts sort of writers, although it's still an area that's got a bit of disrepute. At the same time.
Disrepute. In what way?
Possibly because of the connection with the theatre. Mm-hmm. It was a great kind of entertainment of the working classes. Sometimes royals would slip in to kind of get in on the fun. Mm. But it initially started out in the Corrales of Madrid without a proper made theatre. and people would stand out in the courtyard in the middle and watch plays being put on. And then Madrid got its proper theatre then.
And this is around the same time, so we're talking the 16th century. So what authors are we talking about here?
Right, so going more into the early 17th century, you mm-hmm. get authors like Lope de Vega. Well, I mean, he's the big star at that point, emerging and kind of developing the dramatic arts in Madrid. And it's around the same time, of course, as Shakespeare and the Globe and all that culture exploding in Britain at the same time. Although, interestingly, in England, women weren't allowed to go on the stage. And in Spain, initially not. And then they were allowed to go on the stage, which is seen as fairly risque and scandalous.
Oh.
Some of the plots were quite scandalous as well. And later they were banned because it was seen as immoral again. In Britain, of course, it was young boys dressed up as women.
Of course, yeah. So that's what we've heard from Shakespeare's times. Mm-hmm. I wonder, this is something that I've always been curious about. Did Shakespeare and Cervantes know each other since the parallels are drawn together with the same day of death?
That's a very good question. I've just been reading about that.
Mm.
There is no direct evidence that they knew each other. However, Shakespeare has what are called the missing years, and a lot of people have speculated that during the time when we don't know what Shakespeare was doing, it's just about possible that he might have come to Madrid, and just about possible that Cervantes and Shakespeare might have met during the time. There is a very little known Shakespeare collaboration which riffs off an episode of Don Quixote. Which is not part of the first folio, but part of the maybe Shakespeare, maybe not Shakespeare, sort of King John style things. So maybe they met, but probably not.
Sounds like a good premise for a book, though, those missing years.
Absolutely.
Well, let's talk a bit more about this heritage. Now, what exactly ties this barrio to literature today?
Right, well, it still has this theatre at the heart of it.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's called the Teatro Español in Plaza Santa Ana. But you've also got Ateneo, which was founded in the 1800s, a group of liberal intellectuals who had to flee a very repressive regime in Spain, were kind of a little group in London for a while, and then when they came back, they could properly found this institution, and this whole culture of tertulias really thrived there. So they have a room that's like called the China Room, and it has vases, Chinese vases, but they think that it's also a little bit about like how there would be debates that were so passionate, like literary debates, that people would start sort of smashing the vases.
Oh, my goodness. My gosh. Greek style.
But famous people, famous writers who've come through there are Galdós, of course, his sometime lover, Emilia Pardo Bazán, who is a great writer in her own right, and more recently, Almudena Grandes, who has been a member of the club. And it continues to be a literary institution, and they put on great talks about their literary heritage, and have a fantastic library as well.
Now, from hearing you speak, it seems like the history of this neighbourhood has been very tied with politics and political movements over time. So we've got these bars where they held the tertulias, and then I also understand that during the Civil War there were a lot of international authors that passed through, such as Hemingway.
Yes, exactly. And also maybe a name that many people are terribly familiar with is Arturo Barea, who worked in the census office kind of against Hemingway. They knew each other. They had a bit of a difficult relationship, sometimes friends, sometimes at odds, obviously. But Barea wrote a wonderful book about the Civil War. He was working class madrileño, more of a sort of lavapiés person, but then during the Civil War he stayed in the hotel on Plaza Santa Ana and loved the bars, and he gives a wonderful rich description of the area, as does Laurie Lee as well.
Oh yes, Laurie Lee is an important character, absolutely. Mm. As I walked out one midsummer morning, is the story of how he walked from the north coast of Spain to the south coast through Madrid. He spent some time in Madrid in the summer of 1936, and he's having this wonderful late adolescence, early 20s adventure, playing his violin to keep himself going across Spain while Spain kind of falls apart around him. It's an incredible travelogue.
And then he left because the decision was that he had to leave very quickly, and regretted it, and then tried to sneak back into Spain, getting arrested by the communists who thought he was a spy, and finally managed to sign up for the brigades, which is a reckless, very brave act, I think.
By a great writer and a great poet. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. So before, we've mentioned a lot of authors now, and you also mentioned Alma Elena Grandes, and I understand that the people who haven't been to the barrio wouldn't know, but people that have would have noticed that on the in the pavements of the streets there are golden quotes from all of these different authors. And I understand that until recently there weren't really any, until at first there weren't any quotes by female authors, and that's something recent. But I was wondering when exactly they installed these quotes.
So I just found out it was around 2003, 2004. I can't remember the exact date. But they were doing renovations on the barrio, and they put 13 quotes in, and they were all by men. And it's astonishing that it didn't occur to anybody that they could have put some women in for a bit of representation. And there had to be a campaign mounted by a feminist group called Orbito Diversa. And they managed to get 3 quotes in, but it wasn't for lack of good female
authors.
No,
absolutely. I was going to say, it's hardly a matter of representation. I mean, starting right back in the time of Cervantes, you were telling me, Felicity, and we've got her books in the store as well, about Maria de Vallas, who was almost as popular as Cervantes while writing, was a big name for 16th, 17th century Spain. And was writing about really modern subjects and really, really hard-hitting subjects before, with the masculinization of culture, perhaps, in the Victorian era, she disappears from view. And yet what she's written is amazingly powerful, and she's come back strong, and she's on the street in her golden letters right now.
Do you think there's so much... I guess there's so much in to put into this book, because you've not only got the streets, but you've got all of these stories that you've also added of authors between each other. For example, I know that you've written about the relationship between Cervantes and Lope de Vega, so there are all sorts of fun little tidbits. And I was wondering, is there anything you learnt that you didn't know before writing this that you got really excited about and couldn't wait and thought, oh, I hope everyone reads this part of the book because it's so fun?
I just learned so much in general. I mean, I had a good overview of Madrid's history, but I learned even more. And any tidbits in particular? I think maybe Elena Fortún.
Yes.
It was David's wife, Beatrice, who brought this up, that she was a writer of these children's books.
Celia
about
series.
Celia, yes.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And yet they had a talk in Ateneo around the same time about Elena Fortún, and it turned out she had this whole other life as a member of the Sapphic Society of Madrid. She was
really
married to her cousin, but this was probably a marriage of convenience, and she had very passionate intellectual relationships with other women. And you have Alma Elena Grandes talking about this online somewhere. There's a video of her saying, you know, how they were really bringing themes about women's liberation forward.
It's fascinating. And it's as though in advice on her, someone had a completely different life. And she also wrote a sequel to the Celia series called Celia and the Revolution, which is the only one that's been translated into English.
Wow.
And is currently in the bookstore, which is about Celia in her late teens, early 20s, going through the Civil War. And it's the one episode in the Celia series that wasn't allowed to be published under the Franco regime.
Wow.
And her semi-autobiographical novel about her own life and who she really was, she didn't even try to get published under the Franco regime. It's called Hidden Paths, and it's an amazing book.
The Celia books, for people who might not know, are just about a misbehaving or...
Mischievous.
Yes, misbehaving. So, yeah, that's quite interesting that she had a secret, sad, I guess, darker sort of sequel set in the Civil War. Mm. Now, I'm looking at this book now, and it's pretty big. So I wonder, with all of these stories, where do you draw the line? Like, were there things that you had to keep out? Were there things that, keep out because it just wouldn't fit, or you were just going... you were just spiraling too much, perhaps?
Well, I think what kept me within certain margins was to try and appeal to an English language speaking audience, because that was how it was originally conceived.
Mm-hmm.
And then it got translated into Spanish, and I thought, I heard a radio show about Valle Inclán, and Valle Inclán was quite a character.
He's got his own theatre down in Love Appears now, hasn't he?
He was famous for attending all of Echegaray's plays. Echegaray won the Nobel Prize for Literature, but he actually won it in kind of rather dark circumstances because another Catalan author was going to win it, and the Spanish authorities quashed that. So he made Echegaray suffer for this by attending all his plays and shouting insults.
Oh, my goodness.
He just heckled him.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
the rivalry between writers has been quite a theme throughout the ages and throughout the book.
I mean,
there's some amusing anecdotes about the Cervantes López de Vega time and two other very famous Spanish writers of the Golden Age called Quevedo and Góngora, which seems to have almost come to blood on several occasions.
Well, it's almost as if Quevedo put him out on Góngora out on the street when he was financially ruined, and he died very soon afterwards. So yeah, it did almost
a really hard
battle to the death.
Oh, goodness gracious! But what was the issue there between them?
They had kind of early rap battles, if I can put it that way. They wrote poetry insulting each other.
A tale as old as time.
Góngora was older, and he did a kind of cultismo. I think it's culturismo verse, which is very stylized, and Quevedo was sort of a young gun.
I remember this from school. Very flowery writing verses.
Short and to the point, and then just began to slag each other off in verse.
And the other rivalry that you mentioned, the Cervantes and the Lope de Vega, did they get along sometimes?
Well, they mostly got along most of the time until Cervantes, who came up with Don Quixote very late in life, I think he was about 57, when he brought the proof of Don Quixote to Lope de Vega. Lope de Vega read it, and they'd been friends all this time, and Lope de Vega wrote to a friend and totally trashed the work. And Cervantes was stunned, so he got a little quip back about Lope de Vega later and called him a monstruo de la naturaleza, because I imagine there was a bit of envy there. Lope de Vega was younger, very handsome, he had many lovers, lots of good luck, he was wealthy. Cervantes' life is a catalogue of, well, adventures and disasters.
Picaresque.
Now, one last thing that I understand about these two is that now, I know the street names probably came a lot later after they passed, but now Cervantes is buried on the street of Lope de Vega.
Yes.
And Lope de Vega's old house is on Cervantes Street.
Exactly.
How did that happen?
I had no idea.
López de Vega's house is on Cervantes Street, halfway down the street, but the location of Cervantes' house, which no longer exists, is at the top of Cervantes Street.
Yes, you're right. Yeah.
So it's still Cervantes Street.
It's kind of, he's on top still. If you
mm-hmm. It's still a funny irony, I guess.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, to end this broadcast, I was hoping that you would have some book recommendations since it's book day, maybe mm-hmm. of authors that you can find on the streets of Barrio de las Letras, paved.
That's a good one. I think I'll probably start with one that Felicity mentioned earlier on, The Forging of a Rebel, the Arturo Barrera book. This is an incredible character. It's a book that was strongly recommended by George Orwell, who, of course, had his own adventures during the Spanish Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been edited and pulled together, and the preface written by Nigel Townsend, who's a historian teaching at the Complutense University and who was with us on Friday talking about his latest book, The Penguin History of Modern Spain. And he's done a lot of work on Arturo Barrera, and he's an extraordinary character.
So Arturo Barrera, and the book was?
The Forging of a Rebel.
The Forging of a Rebel.
It's a trilogy, but that's the kind of overarching
title. Barre, isn't it?
But yes, pronunciation, yeah.
And I would recommend always Cervantes, Don Quixote, but then a work that references that is Leaving the Atocha Station.
Oh, yes.
By Ben Lerner. And it's about a young American in Madrid, and it's great about this tension of trying to be fit in but always feeling like you're a tourist. And he talked a lot, he's a poet, so he talks a lot about Lorca in it, but in an interview he said actually he was referencing Don Quixote the whole time, because he felt as if America is at this point similar to how Spain was during Cervantes' time, when Spain had sort of reached the height of its power and was beginning to crumble somewhat. So all these ideals of sort of knighthood, he's lampooning them, and the ideal American, this idea maybe, which is sort of embodied more by Hemingway, these heroic characters are almost crumbling at the same time. And it's a wonderful book. It's really ironic and sad and funny.
It's a brilliant recommendation, yeah, Ben Lerner.
Excellent. Well, there our listeners have it. One last thing, I wonder if there are any songs that you would like to recommend to end the broadcast with that maybe have to do with this, maybe not.
Rosie Garland is a singer I'd like to recommend. She plays with the March Violets, a post-punk band that was put together in the early 1980s. They were big towards the end of the 80s. They're still going strong today. She'll be singing at Dark Madrid on May the 10th, and will be at the Secret Kingdoms Bookshop signing her new book, The Fates, on May the 11th. And I'd like very much to recommend Rosie's music.
Excellent. And where can people find this book?
We can find the Barrio de las Letras Guide, our new Secret Kingdoms book, at the Secret Kingdoms, Calle Moratín 7, at the oldest bookshop in Madrid, still in its original premises, in Desnivel, just up the road from us, just down the hill at Caixa Forum, and at all good bookshops across Madrid.
Oh, and Desnivel have it online as well.
Yes, so I was going to ask if there's any there's any hope for people.
And it should be on La Libreria's website soon.
Yes.
Okay, Desnivel and La Libreria for people who can't pop by Madrid anytime soon.
Oh yeah, La Libreria helped us and they're great for books about Madrid, so shout out to them.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for stopping by.
Okay,
thank you very much, guys. Thank you.
Felicity Hughes, who recently published A Guide to Madrid's Literary District, a book all about the Barrio de las Letras here in the capital of Spain, and David Price, owner of the English bookshop Secret Kingdoms, which is located in the barrio. I know it's your touch and the way love should be. I'm deep down within your eyes, oh. listening to the English language broadcast of Spanish National Radio with Amy Egan and Marilyn Quintana. Today we've had help from sound technician Javier López and production help from Cristina Dorado.
We thank you for listening and hope you tune in again for future broadcasts.